This show discusses content of an adult nature and does not reflect the views of Tux FM or any of its affiliates. This is The Sex Show on Tux FM 107.2.
Welcome to another episode of The Sex Show, an explorative space where we discuss and share our experiences about everything from steamy stories to the messy, magical world of sex, gender, and relationships. This season, we're turning up the heat and honesty as we dive deeper into the complexities of gender and what it really means to connect with someone or someones.
We are your host. I am Toba underscore Rad. Stola Sabina Toba, host and Kiti, now and Kiti. And to put a simple translation, all that it means is that if you didn't know me, now you definitely get to know me.
And I'm Anastasia Diaz.
We're still keeping things entertaining, educational, and a little bit cheeky. So whether you're figuring things out or spicing things up, or just here for the wild ride, you are in the right place.
Today's episode is our season finale, and we thought it would be the best idea to touch on something that I don't think we've even hinted at in our ignorance, right? We're going to be speaking with our two guests. If you could please introduce yourselves.
Hi, my name is Brit Mello.
Hi, my name is Zibu.
And today we are going to be discussing sex with disabilities. So could you just tell us about your challenges? Let us get to know you.
So I have albinism. So I'm visually impaired. And that's as far as my challenges go, really.
So I am partially blind. No, pardon me, I'm totally blind. I don't know what I'm saying. But I'm also visually impaired, and I see color shades, and I can only make out what an object is if I've looked at it for like so long.
Okay, so obviously with this life experience that you guys have, do you feel like it's not really represented enough in larger media like TVs, music? What is that experience?
Well, first, I've come across so many visually impaired people who have been on TV. And I think the problem with people who live with a disability is that we are the ones who tend to sort of, what that thing we did during COVID.
Isolate
ourselves. Yes. So we are the ones who choose to not like expose ourselves because we are sort of scared of the outside world. Well, I'm not. Like, come for me if you may. but every other person I've met who lives with a disability, that's why you find that even in our friendship circles, we hang out as people with disabilities because we tend to understand each other and then we close the rest of the world outside, which is not okay.
Facts. I don't know. I feel like there are so many people with albinism now, especially like in the modeling industry. And so I feel well represented. I was hoping to be someone that represents, but you know, life doesn't work like that. And I think it's very interesting that you've decided on a different take on sex.
Yeah. So actually what I meant with, and I sometimes, you know, words are difficult. I meant like in terms of sexuality and being sexy and desirable as a person with a disability. Do you feel like that's something that you're seeing more and more now? Or is it still something like because of the isolation that you guys experience with like that self-induced, but also like society-wise, is it something that like you don't feel gets enough recognition?
Yeah, so I think that a lot of people view people with disabilities as innocent, like there's no way they do these things. So the sexuality gets removed as a result of the association with your disability. I think especially for people who are physically disabled, like mobility-wise, I feel like that no one actually ever processes that because they're already pitying them essentially.
And I totally agree with that. Dova said that he didn't know I was like not innocent until he got to speak to me.
No,
so
to be fair, you have such an innocent voice and you're just like such an innocent little baby. And then you speak and I'm like, okay.
And she catches you by surprise. Like she will never just give you like a warning. She's just there, you know?
But yeah, it's like, back to your question, people do tend to pity us. They look at you, they tend to forget that the only problem, like with me, people forget that the only problem I have is with my eyes. And the rest of the other functions, they work perfectly well. Like, I do have hormones, I do get horny, and oops, am I allowed to say that?
Yes.
Yeah. So I do get aroused, and because I want to have fun as well, so yeah.
So would you say that a part of the challenges you experience in finding a partner, in dating, in being viewed as sexy is that you're not seen as like a mature adult with like full mental capacity.
Yes. Okay. Absolutely.
With that, what would you guys say are some of the assumptions or awkward reactions you've encountered when people learn you're sexually active or interested in dating or just being sexually active with someone? Let's say you're talking, you start talking to someone, you're like, okay, let's do the deed. What are some of the awkward interactions you've had?
Well, the biggest question I've had was, uyayenza nawe. Like, do you literally do it as well? So I think it goes back to the whole thing of people not understanding that the only problem we have is with sight, but everything else works perfectly. It's just that reaction of, do you really do this? Can you really take it? Like, because once you pity somebody, once you feel sorry for somebody, you feel like you're going to hurt them, right? Mm-hmm. So they also think that, oh, if I put my penis inside her, I might just hurt her. So it goes back to the whole thing.
Yeah, I was going to add, I feel like people view us as very fragile, like adding to your point, because, yeah, like you go, like, are you okay? Is this okay? Like, my encounter was, one of the people I have slept with was like, I can't believe I'm sleeping with an albino model. Like, oh my God.
What?
They were like, and I was like, okay, well, I'm just going to move past that because I've never heard that in my entire life and I don't really know how to react to that. So then I realized that a lot of guys do view me as attractive, but like, it's like sleeping with a unicorn, like when you sleep with me, essentially, or anyone with my condition.
So you feel like a bit of, I want to say, objectification.
Yeah, to some degree.
So with those challenges, and I want to say being seen as fragile and someone that, like, I can't go there, I can't do that, how do you then navigate feeling sexy within your own right and feeling like you're desirable and really, like, exploring that when so much of society views you as people that aren't capable of having sex or being sexy sometimes?
To be honest, I feel like I overcompensate by being flirty and friendly and things like that. You know, sometimes even not intentionally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's literally that's what I do.
I feel like I overcompensate by having sex talk with a lot of people. So I tend to sexualize everything. And it's just to hint, especially if I'm around somebody I find attractive. Right? Well, I don't find anyone here attractive. But yeah, I tend to like ensure, like, have the talk, yes, sex, so that they know that I can also do it, you know? And also, yeah, what she said as well, like, tend to be too friendly, too nice, and stuff like that.
So does insane then doing that, right? Does it make you more comfortable in your own sexuality?
I feel like I'm already comfortable in my own sexuality. Like, I love myself.
Yeah, I feel like society's view doesn't change, like, how you feel
about yourself.
Mm-hmm. So you still feel sexy.
Yes.
And that's the point of being, like, communicating that outwards. Of being like, I'm sexy, I feel sexy.
Yeah.
Guys, do you know that I'm sexy? Be aware.
Yes.
That's the vibe you're bringing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Still tuned in to The Sex Show right here on Tux FM 107.2. And today we are joined by two lovely ladies and we are talking every single thing to do with sex when it comes to people who are differently abled. And off air, we're speaking about how it's already hard enough for guys who are fully able to not get sex or get laid. And now when it comes to guys who have a disability or who are differently abled, I think the chances just get slimmer and slimmer. And I think you guys would be able to better tell me according to that. How have you guys experienced that, where your friends or people that you just might know, how has their experience of getting laid been?
I think it's especially with people who are physically disabled, like, you know, require mobility assistance, that I feel women don't think that they have at all a chance to, like, lay with this person, you know, because it has a lot to do with if they're paralyzed or, you know, quadriplegic and whether they can still get it up and stuff. So it plays a lot on how the guy kind of misses an opportunity with a girl. And I also think with that, it's a lot more complicated for guys, like, in my opinion. I think girls, it's a lot easier. We just have holes that you fill up with. And with guys, yeah, it's just very, very different.
But speaking for people who are, she spoke for people who are, I want to say crippled. I don't want to say people who are crippled, right? But people who are physically challenged. But like, she spoke for them. I'm speaking for people who are visually impaired. Just like us, they have everything of theirs function. They do get an erection, they have hormones and whatever. They most probably get more sex than any other guy would because they tend to use, some of them tend to use that to their advantage. And, you know, girls are more emotional than guys. So the guy would like sort of manipulate the lady to say, hey, look, I'm visually impaired, da da da, and I really like it. Da, da. Then when you have sex with a guy who's visually impaired or even any sort of disability, don't let them use the fact that they're, let the fact that they're disabled not be the reason why you sleep with them.
I think I can definitely back that because if you think about it, guys use every single advantage that they have to better themselves. Like if you know that, okay, I can't smooth talk girls, you're going to work hard to get rich that you have money to do the talking for you. So I think you work on each and every single ability, and it's so crazy that you can actually use all these abilities to get girls. And I think it's going to sound so wrong, but for them, it's also such a big, like, such an easy entry point. Like, I don't know if you've seen the skits on TikTok where people will act blind, and then a girl will just come by, and then they're like, okay, now there's just a girl to start smooth talking because she's here already. She's here to help me, but I'm like, I'm going to use this opportunity to try and get with her.
And maybe it might be that assumption, that shame. This person probably gets looked down by others. He probably has never had this interaction with any other girl. So, you know, maybe I should help him out. Like, ugh, shame.
Meanwhile,
you know?
This man is just every single second girl.
He's having a good time.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I want to ask, guys. Now, obviously, you two ladies are living with your disability. So what is your then, I want to say, perception of people that you find attractive with disabilities? Because obviously, like, you're not blinded by, oh, this person is visually impaired or they have like a physical disability. So is it like, do you feel you're meeting on the same grounds? Like, oh, this is a person that really understands my life.
Yes, and it's less of a visual thing and more of like a emotional connection or like a spiritual connection. Like, because in some instances, like Zibu, I'd say, I don't think she could like literally see attraction, but having a conversation with someone would probably make her more attracted to them.
Do you agree?
Yes, I do.
Mm.
So it's more like you guys feel, do you feel more comfortable dating someone who has a disability, or is it like just a point of commonality or like a point of bonding?
My boyfriend and I both have albinism.
Mm-hmm.
So I find it a lot easier to be with him than in comparison with like my exes, essentially. Like, I don't know, there's just a deeper connection. We relate on so many other levels beyond just like a normal life.
Yeah.
You know, because he has experiences that I share with him. But in addition, he also went to the school that Zibu went to, so the school for the blind. And he has more experience about those things that he gets to share with me. Like, because I went to a mainstream school, I feel like I missed out on a lot of things in terms of the disabled community. And it's just so insightful to have, you know, someone who actually kind of have that experience to be intimate with, essentially.
I feel like she mentioned, I went to a school with people who are exactly like me. All of them, blind, 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 blind. You look left, there's a blind person. Look right, there's a blind person. So I try as much to, like, not stay away from the circle because my best friend is here, like, no. She's not blind. But, like,
I'm not blind.
And I've, like, surrounded myself with people with albinism and people who are visually impaired. Like, when I got to varsity, I was like, I'm not going, like, I'm going to try and, like, sort of try to talk to a whole different kind of people, you know. I've been with guys who live with albinism or guys who are visually impaired, and I can't really give a proper answer because I haven't been with a guy who's not disabled at all, you know.
Oh, that's
so I can't make that comparison. Mm-hmm. But however, I would think that, like, preference wise I wouldn't want to date anybody with any sort of disability.
Because of how you grew up, essentially.
Yeah.
And
I've like had many experiences with people who live with a disability. We tend to feel entitled to certain things. We tend to think that the world should, like, stretch itself so that it could accommodate us, you know. Some people don't, like, realize that you have to do things to, like, make sure the world accommodates you. So I'm scared of having that mindset rubbed onto me and then I would, like, be limited or anything like that. So I want to be with somebody, rather preferably with no disability, so that I could be, you know, like, be myself, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, my experience is literally opposite because I've been mainstream the whole, like, my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
Being at UP is my only experience of, like, having a disabled community, essentially. And I've been with guys that don't have disabilities, and then this is my first time. So it's like, for me, it's like, oh, wow, this is so interesting. Whereas if I feel like if I was at Prinsenhof, for example, I probably would just be annoyed and want someone without disabilities.
And also dating a disabled person, well, not disabled, people who lives with a disability, whereas you are also living with a disability, it's sort of an inconvenience, you know? You walk into ShopRite, you both can't see the price, and you're there feeling, and the next thing you're dropping tomato sauce, and
that's so true.
It's a whole thing.
Or
you
when
know?
You both end up buying the wrong products, like it's tomato sauce, but this one says chili tomato sauce, and you guys both didn't look at it.
Exactly.
So now...
So it's a lot.
The wrong one. Yeah,
and it goes beyond just having sex with a disabled person. It's also relationship-wise. Generally, it's nice when you're in your own little space, the both of you. But like when it comes to interacting with the outside world, it's so difficult. Mm. You know.
So there's definitely like elements that you want to be with someone without a disability or who isn't living with a disability. And there are aspects of life where you're like, I would actually really love that experience and like that common understanding.
Yes.
Yes. It's a mixture of both.
You're still tuned into The Sex Show on Tux FM 107.2. And if you just tuned in, we are having an interview, a little conversation with two lovely ladies that are living with disabilities. And if you missed it, we were previously discussing dating people with disabilities versus people with no disabilities and the pros and cons that kind of come with that, right? And Boitumelo made a very good point about how Zibu's understanding of attraction is going to be so different because of her being visually impaired, right? A lot of times when we're talking about attraction, we're talking about visual aspects, people. Like you look at someone, you're like, yo, you're fine, right? But for Zibu, it's so different for you. So take us through what attraction means to you in the sense of it's like instant.
I would like to mention that before this, my sight was way better than it is now. So I would also work on a thing of, oh my gosh, he's hot. Grab me right now, you know. But when I lost my sight, like almost half of it, not even half of it, like 75% of it, I had to like learn how to find guys attractive in a whole new way, to like look beyond the looks, right? So I would walk into the room and the first thing I look at or I try to feel is your height. So if you like right in my face, I'm assuming you're short and I don't like short people.
Oh,
so
I feel very much offended as a short king. Thank you very much.
I mean, all you have to be is taller than me. Like I just have to be here. And if I'm here, then it's a no-no. So I work on height and also I work on... I don't want to say how your English sounds, but I don't want you to be a horrible English speaker as well. So, like, how fluent are you when speaking English, when speaking Swana? Just language, how do you sound when you speak, right? Also, conversation as well. So what attracts me more is the kind of person you are. Because we did say that when you're disabled, people turn to not, like, fake themselves because they're people turn to show us the real side of them.
100%.
Might be the nice side, but it's still the real side. So they won't pull up to you and like show the perfect side or the side they want you to see so that you can date them. So I also work on character as well. I think that's what you call it, right? Character. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also look at character. So I look at height, I look at character and how you sound when you speak. So if, yeah, just speak fluently. Don't, it's nice to speak English through the nose, but now don't sound black and speak English through the nose as well.
Like, competition is so tough because, I mean, for me, it was just always been like, be a guy. If you're not good looking, just be funny. But clearly for Zibu, that doesn't even work because it's not even about being funny. Now you need to speak proper English. There's a lot that is
not
going
only
into
proper it. English. Just sound fluent when you speak. There's some guys who just sound...
But what if you just... Because I think English is not everyone's mother tongue.
Not English specifically. Like, Listwana, there are some people who just butcher their language. Like, you know.
So, you know what's so interesting, right? When you speak to a lot of women, in general, they're like, yo, guys, if a man's voice is deep,
yo,
sign me up. You did not say that. I'm so shocked. Like,
you
I would
my
think.
Twitter voice.
Honestly, like, deep voices. Like, I'm saying, sound fluent. I need to hear what you're saying.
Wow.
Yo, yeah, it's very important.
So it's more about hearing what you're saying over how your voice sounds. I'm not saying now I want a guy who sounds like, oh my God, no. But I'm looking for a man who sounds like a man, but also a man who's well-spoken, not only in English, in any other language, but like, just sound good when you speak. Don't sound like you are trying to speak a certain language.
I think that has a lot to do with like, I lip read a lot more than I actually listen to someone because it helps for some reason. Like, I know it's ironic, but I feel like because people who are blind can't necessarily like see the lip reading, they have to pay very close attention to what you're saying and how you're saying it. Like, yeah, that's essentially what it is.
I think in that sense, if you're explaining it like that, it makes a lot of sense. But I think Twaba, he's out. He's out.
100%.
Wow.
You're cooked, bro.
The criteria just keeps getting tough. You know, I thought criteria was already tough as it is. Like, guy must have a job, car, and I must speak proper English and not mumble. And I think I mumble a lot.
And you do. And you know, it's so funny because I think we've been around each other long enough that now I can understand your mumbling.
Yes, Anastasia can understand my mumbling. And it's just the thing of that you just need to understand my mumbling. And I don't think I mumble always. It's just...
No, I need to hear what you're saying because remember, I can't see facial expressions. Or I can't see them anymore. So I don't know what you look like, what you sound like. I mean, the way you articulate your voice makes
especially the way you
understand how you're feeling, what you're thinking. Whatever you see when you lip, whatever she sees when she lips read, reads whatever you see when you look at my face as I'm talking to you. I need to hear that through your voice. So now if you don't, like if you don't speak fluently, then I'm like, kanoreng, brah, you know?
I mean,
what are you saying?
Wow. I think I want to bring this back also to a question that I had early on with regards to you saying that you went to a school where everyone around you was blind. And I think me and Anastasia has spoken a lot about how the schools that where we came from kind of shaped the way that we see sex now as adults. Of course, with you, I want you to please explain how sex was perceived in your school, because I think Anastasia went to a very churchy-based school whereby sex is something you guys are not talking about. It's taboo. Whatever. I want you to please explain to me how you guys saw sex. I think the experience for you must have been so different towards what we would have experienced in, would I say, a church-based school or just a boys' school in general.
So with our school, I feel like any other high school, primary school, they are not trying to get teenagers having sex, right? So they would like speak and say, hey, try and stay abstinent for as long as you can. But just like any other school, we also had people who were sexually active, right? So the school, we during life orientation especially, we would speak about practicing safe sex, the consequences of not having safe sex, the, you know, you might get AIDS, you might do this, you might get that. So we were well educated on sex. So we were not necessarily, we were advised to not have it, like any other school, like any other adult, like any other parent would say, no, please try and avoid having sex for as long as possible, and at least until you get married or anything like that. While with school, no one would say get married because, again, they are not trying to, like, bring up religion into it, right? So it was just a thing of we were taught the consequences of having sex and how it should be practiced and whatever, but we were not motivated to go and have it.
So then I want to ask, like, within that, right, what were the conversations that you guys were having around sex and, like, navigating that? Because it's obviously a little different to people who are not visually impaired. So were there conversations about, like, what makes different guys attractive? Or what was that experience? Not necessarily from, I want to say, an educational point of view, but from children, like, your peers.
Oh, so our school is a school not with totally blind people. So everybody had their own view of like what's attractive, how sex should be done, whatever. You know, we had people who were partially blind. We had people who were partially sighted. People were different. So everybody had their own different view on how sex should be performed. It wasn't like based on, not all of us were like totally blind, not all of us. So obviously we won't all have like the same opinion or the same thoughts or share the same views, rather.
You said that 3 times. Sorry, I just had to say I'm sorry.
Yeah, I felt the need to use it redundant.
And then I think this is a very, very personal question. You guys can choose to answer it or not, but at which age did you lose your virginity at?
Oh, God.
Really in their business. Zibi,
you start.
Oh, no, you start. So I had my first kiss in grade 7.
Let's
I was 14. it's 16. I was so tempted because, you know, by 16, everybody's talking about, oh, sex. Da, da, da. I was so scared to fall pregnant at 16, right? And I was also not an adult by then, right? So when I got to, what happened with me was I had to switch from a mainstream school to a school with people, to a school where visually impaired people are accommodated, because the condition I have, my sight deteriorates over time, right? So they just decided to like make life easy and just move me to the school. So the time I was 18, I was in grade 11 instead of grade 12. So when I turned 18, I was like, why not, right? So essentially I lost my virginity after I turned 18.
That's not bad. That's really not that bad.
Yeah, you, that's
minus 3 years, and that's my age when I lost my virginity.
At 15?
Mm.
See, I'm not alone.
I was actually turning 16 that year, so.
See, I'm not alone.
Ayo.
I'm not alone. You're looking at me and you're judging me.
I'm not. I just thought that you lost your virginity at like 18 for some reason.
No, I was in grade 9. Yeah. I literally told you my heartbreak story.
Yes, but oh yeah, you did. You did. Okay,
I
want to
hear this.
You know what? I was actually a late bloomer. I think I had sex for the first time at like 21. Yeah. Yeah.
But I was so tempted to like have proper sex at 16, and I even attempted to, and then when the time came and I saw that this thing is the one that's gonna put a baby inside me, I was like, No, get off, ah, no.
Real.
Yeah.
Real. Very real. What was I going to say? Oh, touching on your question regarding people who are partially sighted and fully blind, another way that they go about getting intimate with someone is literally through touch. Like, I'm aware that they like touch each other, like the whole body, just to get to know the person intimately as well.
I've touched you more than your boyfriend.
You are still tuned into The Sex Show on Tux FM 107.2. If you just entered this beautiful conversation we're having, we are currently interviewing two lovely ladies with disabilities. And I think my final question really is, how can dating apps or social spaces become more inclusive in your opinion?
I've never used a dating app.
Neither have I.
I fear for my life. Yo, next thing, it's this light-skinned guy and you think is your type, and then when you pull up, it's a Nigerian in a bush, and then you're kidnapped and you're gone. So I'm scared.
It's very
I've never
true.
Used a dating app, honestly. I think dating apps should like generally just like be better for everybody, because nobody's safe, eh? That's what I think. I'm not sure.
Another question I have is, I feel like dating apps should allow videos or something, like, or voice, something for the voice, so that blind people can actually hear them or whatever the case may be. But to be honest, I don't feel like dating apps work well for people with disabilities.
I don't think they work well for anybody, really. Like, I also think the whole voice thing, minus it being for blind people, it should be for everybody, so that when you meet him in person and that's not the voice you heard on a dating app, you know, just walk away. Because he was clearly lying.
Fair, actually.
Yeah.
Fair.
I mean, wow. I feel traumatized because there was a lot that was said off air, but getting to dating apps, our producer is currently on a certain dating app, but he's scrolling through and living their best life right now. But I think personally for me, I don't think the voice thing would be such a good feature onto dating apps, because I mean, I've seen a lot of people and a lot of the girlies on dating apps, and the filters and the makeup, and then I know them in real life, or I've seen them in real life. Two different stories. So I feel like even your voice, you can alter your voice to sound like me. I have a squeaky voice, or not a masculine voice according to Zibu, but like I could alter my voice to sound like Ntari. If you are a regular listener on Tux FM, you'll know Ntari, who does lunch show. He sounds like
okay, that's a good point.
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of manipulation that can go into dating apps if they had to introduce a voice function onto that.
Okay, so what about like social spaces, right? How do you think social spaces, in terms of like dating, I want to say, could be more inclusive?
A social space is only deemed a social space because it's open up to everybody, right? However, the people there are the ones who make it social. So it's all about what people do in social spaces to make them inclusive of everybody, I guess.
I agree. I was going to say that, like what Zibu said in the previous part, is that how people with disabilities isolate themselves because they don't want to really be amongst the normal people, like out of fear, essentially. I think if we break that barrier, there would be more opportunity for inclusivity. Because even like when I was watching that series on Netflix about autistic people dating each other.
Oh, love on the spectrum, yes.
Yes, love on the spectrum. I was like, why must it be that an autistic person dates another? Like, why can't it be a regular person dating a person with autism? You know, like, why can't it be that a blind person dates another person without being blind? You know, like, I would appreciate a bit more integration so that the recessive gene kind of also falls away at the same time.
So it's mainly all about what we do as people living with disabilities and what people who do not have disabilities do to what we do to accommodate each other.
Yes.
As well. And so I think it's also all about getting to know each other, because I'm assuming most people don't know anything about anybody who's blind. They're just there like clueless and they have so many questions and they are scared to ask and da-da-da-da. So it's all about getting to know each other so that we are able to like date each other, I guess. And not only dating as well, it would also help like in terms of employability, in terms of what can you do, what can't you do, if I give you a job, what are you going to do, da-da-da. Not only in a relationship. We shouldn't like let it be based on relationships only, I guess.
I think we've genuinely learned a lot from this episode. It's safe to say that Zibu is not innocent. I'm traumatized.
And I'm also not single, so guys.
You're also not single.
Not Tinder, but anything, anyone, because single. Like.
Wait, so you are
single.
Said
you are single.
Oh, you said you're not single.
I wanted to say I'm single, guys. So ish to your listeners, ladies and gents, I'm single.
And she's ready to mingle.
Yes.
Well, that has been the sex show right here on at SaxFM 107.2. And I think this is essentially the end of the season.
Yes, this was our season finale. This is our last hurrah for right now. So I'm excited. I feel like we've had a very good season. It's been really informative. A lot of crazy
shocking
things.
Moments. I think I've never been as traumatized as I was this season. I think I thought I knew sex. And the season proved that I'm just a newbie. I'm just a new person to this thing. And there's a lot to explore and learn.
And you know what's beautiful? Next season, we come back and we learn even more.
Bye.
Bye.